Here in northern Minnesota, the Mississippi River is hard to ignore. While 9 other states claim the river as their border, only Minnesota has the source of the river. We live at the headwaters where the river is relatively small. It flows in every direction at some point, giving us the impression that it is everywhere all at once. For many of us, it is a river that is chiseled into our imaginations with romantic notions. It is a waterway full of possibilities and adventures. Perhaps it was a black and white movie scene as a child long ago of Huck Finn and Jim on a raft following the big river in search of their own destiny or freedom. Or the history lesson of Henry Schoolcraft on an expedition to discover the source of the mighty river. It is a river worthy of dreams. I am Jim Gallagher, and this is Paddle, Minnesota on Northern Community Radio. In this installment of Paddle, Minnesota, we're going to hear stories from and about some of the travelers that have come to follow the stretch of Mississippi between Lake Itasca and Bemidji downstream. Some will have successful trips, and others will not. At first glance, a trip down the Mississippi seems somewhat safe and civilized, but still within the realm of a grand adventure. Mark Morrissey is the director of Bemidji State University's outdoor program. Through his position and from the shore of Lake Bemidji, he meets many paddlers along the route down the river.
Every year, we talk to people on the telephone, and they're making plans. I think a lot of people, they look over these maps, and they kind of dream up something they've always wanted to do is paddle the Mississippi from its headwaters to the Gulf, just like they want to hike the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail or a mountain they want to climb. It's like a bucket list, lifetime list for many, many people. And they know we're kind of an outfitter up here and know stretches the river. So we'll assist with a lot of people. We've run shuttles and got them set up at the headwaters. And you literally have to show people, well, it's ankle deep and 3 steps across. If they're over-provisioned and they have too much equipment and they bring like a month's worth of food, they're going to find it's going to be tough sledding, literally. That's exactly what you're doing is you're out of your boat and pushing your boat across right. The grass and the gravel. And the river goes through a culvert under a road. I mean, it's ankle deep at the very headwaters. It's some 60 miles of paddling, and depending on the water level, there's people who've done that in a couple of days, and there's some people that take about 5 days to do it. Yeah. A safe bet is to say, you know, if you plan about 5 days, you'll have a leisurely pace, but some people can jam right through there if the water's fine and they just kind of keep moving.
Paddlers beginning at the headwaters in Itasca State Park have their hopes intact. Their optimism shines like a brand new penny. The creek flowing from Lake Itasca seems incongruous with the mighty Mississippi moniker, but even small waters can humble. Here's Mark Morrissey recounting the recent rescue of a Utah-based kayaker on the upper Mississippi.
He went, what I would say, over-provisioned. He meant to take a kayak and towing another kayak with supplies. So this makes some sense if you're out on bigger water and you can just kind of stay on the water and keep on moving. But for the shallow, twisty, you know, difficult little corridor up there, it just didn't work for him. So he managed to get stranded trying to pull this big thing, and then he was real wet and got stuck when this recent cold weather, like we've had a real dry, real cold spring, and so he required rescue. He had to make a phone call to get out of there because he was wet and he was stranded essentially in a deep in the wilderness. I mean, he was quite out there. They put out a call and there was somebody nearby who was able to spot him with binoculars, and I think some sheriff's department guys. Those fellows went out there and basically got to him, and the guy couldn't help himself. He was too cold. That's an important thing to consider this time of year is how you dress for it. Are you really thinking about getting in the water or not? It's still the real thing out there. The water can be cold. Water can be deep. All the answers aren't there for you. You have to figure things out.
We're talking about the headwaters stretch of the Mississippi River on Paddle, Minnesota on Northern Community Radio. Minnesota author Sue Leaf attempted to paddle this same section of the Mississippi with her family 20 years ago.
Well, I am sure right now that some of your listeners are chuckling to themselves if they've tried themselves to paddle the upper Mississippi. Like, what could be more romantic, right, than starting at Lake Itasca and paddling to Bemidji? But we didn't start at Itasca. We thought we would start at Coffee Pot Landing. I think we thought that the river would be a little bit more passable at that point. And we dropped our canoe in, and it was. And it was very interesting, except that this took place in was it 96 or 97? We did not have readings for the water levels. And now I know that that's key, but at the time, no one told us that. Our map that we had from the DNR didn't mention that. They just gave us river miles and the landings, and we had a really nice first day. I had read Schoolcraft's account. He leaves a really nice account of the Mississippi River in this area. And he says that the river alternates between rapids and paddles through large grassy expanses, but I didn't really pay attention to that. And we ran into these grassy expanses on the second day, and they were at a point, because the water level was low, in which the river just seemed to disappear, and the cattails had overtaken an area. So we were paddling in what was essentially a marsh. And we could tell there was a flow because we could look at the water plants and see which way their fronds were waving. But other than that, we actually would get out of the canoe on tussocks and push the canoe through a grassy curtain to get to what we thought was the river, the true river. And we did this several times until we realized that this wasn't going to change, that we were going to be in this marsh for a really long time. And it was raining, it was getting cold, and we had small children in the canoes. We had two canoes at the time. Finally, after several hours, and I was getting increasingly concerned for them, that, you know, it would be several hours more. I wasn't sure we had the strength to continue all the way through the marsh, and I wasn't sure that we wouldn't run into another marsh, you know, because they weren't marked on the map. So we had a family powwow, and we voted to turn around and get out of there. And it took us another 3-4 hours to get out. And we ended up in the promised land, which was Bemidji, an absolutely wonderful city to see, yes.
Especially after that experience.
Yes.
Well, sometimes you got to know when to call it quits. That's a hard thing to do.
We've never done that before. We've never aborted a trip before.
Not everyone is turned back by the headwater stretch of the upper Mississippi. Mike Forbes spent a career as co-superintendent for Bemidji's wastewater treatment facility. From his office located along the river in Lake Irving, over the course of years, he watched many paddlers approaching from upstream. A few years back, he encountered a British kayaker who needed a bit of help.
Late afternoon, I was walking by there, and I could hear someone talking to me, and I couldn't see him at first. It was early summer, and the willows and dogwoods had grown up, and I could finally see this guy, and I asked him what he was doing. He was trying to figure out where he was. He wasn't exactly sure what part of the lake or river he was on. And that was a fairly common question. Some people would be pretty confused. And it turns out he was from Great Britain. He was on a journey to do the whole headwaters. His mission was to help raise awareness and funds for wounded British veterans in the Iraqi conflict. So he was raising money and bringing awareness and doing this trip, and that was his deal. And he had a kind of a full boat type kayak, and I met him over at the boat landing, and he was a kind of a mess. He'd covered the 60 miles from the headwaters in 4 or 5 days. He'd rolled over at least once, lost some of his gear. He didn't have a PFD. He lost his water bottle. His face was all puffed up. Between the sunburn and the mosquitoes, his face was a mess. He could kind of see out of one eye and pretty well out of the other. He was pretty squinted up. I offered him some help. We can kind of take care of some of your stuff here, I said, and I can take you to go get whatever it is you need. And ran him up to Gander Mountain, and he got a PFD and a water bottle and dropped him off, I think, at Bridget's. And he got a meal and a pint. I picked him up, and we took him home. And he spent the night at our place, got a shower, and got regrouped and packed up again the next day and started off down the river.
If a traveler is lucky, he or she gets help before they start a trip. Here's Mark Morrissey.
There was a guy some years ago, he was a Western raft guide, and he wanted to take a raft down the Mississippi. And I think people have an image in their mind of like Huck Finn, and they're just going to put this raft onto the river and smoke their pipe as they float. Yeah. Stars twinkle, and they're going to just float down the Mississippi River. We had explained to him that it was really this shallow little channel at the very beginning. But he actually had a raft. So we traded him for a canoe and showed him how to lift it and portage it and showed him, you know, how a canoe is going to work. So he took his canoe, paddled that section with just a few days' provisions, and that was a much smarter plan. Picked up his larger load, guitar, you know, his, all of his coolers and whatever else he was bringing, and then down the river he went.
There's a reason why canoes are popular in this part of the world.
They're perfectly adapted to that type of travel. You can slide them, you can climb in, you can climb out, you can quickly empty them and carry them over your head. That's exactly the vehicle.
At the headwaters, travelers on the Mississippi have their idealism intact. By the time they reach Bemidji, if they do, the realities of distance, weather, their own limitations, and the river itself have smoothed the rough edges of their expectations. They will likely have a memorable experience on the small upper reaches of the river, perhaps not the one they were expecting, and very possibly they could have an adventure.